And I asked Anna what she was going to say. She said, just see, here's Carolyn Robert.
Thank you very much.
Well, good afternoon. And someone did say, oh, lucky you, you've got the graveyard slot. So we hope it's not going to be the graveyard slot. And we would really like this afternoon to be sort of as interactive as we can make it. For those of you that want to interact, we've got all the documents and some cards and things that we're going to be using, but they're more towards the front of the room. So either come and get some if you want them, or if you're happy to observe, then please feel free to stay towards the back. So what we're really thrilled to be talking about today is, you know, the day is about culture and how as coaches can we really influence culture. And for the last sort of 20 years or so, I've worked with different organisations looking at how to support cultural change, but more from a coaching perspective. And as a sort of an individual coach, but also doing team coaching and teaching leadership programmes, I've used, as probably a lot of you have in the room, lots of different tools to support that. So 360s, different psychometrics, a lot of things to help support people. And so why I'm particularly thrilled to be here this afternoon and Liz agreed that we could come and talk is because what we want to talk about is something that is having a huge impact on quite a lot of the clients that we're working with. And it's helping them understand their motivation. And by understanding motivation, how that can help create more of a thriving culture. And I think from my perspective as a coach, when I have somebody's motivational profile and when they have an opportunity to see what motivates them, it can have a really useful impact on our coaching conversations and how I can really add value quite quickly. And it's sort of one of those things that I wished I'd known about this more for myself personally when I was looking at career and where I wanted to go in my life. But I think it can be an incredibly useful tool, whether it's for an individual person looking at what's important to them, whether a leader understanding what motivates them or what motivates their team. So that's really what we want to talk about. And I'm really pleased that Rob, he's called Rob Nunn, and he's head of leadership development at Grosvenor. And he will tell you a little bit more about their organisation. But we've partnered together for quite a while supporting on the cultural change journey. And so Rob's going to tell you more from his perspective what, you know, how it's gone and how we've worked. So,
do we see that bit?
To you? Yes.
I'm a bit of a tech geek, so I apologise now. You know, normally people tell you to put your phones away and that kind of stuff. So if you've got a phone, can you actually take it out? Because I'd like you to use it. So quite often you don't get the opportunity to ask questions and so on, although there's definitely not 45 people here, so obviously there's a late train that people are trying to catch. So there's an event running at the moment called Slido. So this will give you the opportunity to post any questions that you might have. So when we do a Q&A, we'll have a bank of questions to answer. And it also means if you're like me, a little bit introverted and don't like to put your hand up, that's fine because you'll have somebody to put it up on the screen. So if you go to slido.com, that's the login code there, and you'll see that there's actually a live poll on there at the moment asking if you can log in. So just say yes or no on that if you can get in. And we'll see. It might be fun, it might not work, but it's always good to do. I think you want to do this one.
So how we're going to structure the session is we're going to talk about motivation and what it is, and Rob's really going to explain why it was important for Grosvenor and to give you a bit of understanding of their business and where the culture was and where they wanted to move it. So we'll sort of make that connection first. And then what we're going to do is I'm going to give you a really quick whistle-stop tour of some of the motivation that we've been using. And there are cards on some of the seats. I'm going to sort of just introduce you to the model. Is anybody familiar? Has anybody used motivational maps already? One lady, thank you. So, you know, this is one of lots of different tools around, but it's certainly one that we're finding is really making a difference to coaching. So I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the theories of it, but not too much because probably as coaches, a lot of you will be familiar with them anyway, but to really talk about these nine motivators and what makes people tick, and we're going to explain about how we've used those. We'll get you thinking about your own motivators. So it's an opportunity for you to do a bit of your own self-reflection in terms of what you believe motivates you. I always love working with leadership teams, and I'm that irritating person who they all go online and they do their assessment, but when we actually run the workshop for the first couple of hours, I don't actually give them their reports, but I get them to work out, understand motivation, get them to think about what motivates them. And it's usually a 50-50 split between people who are pretty self-aware and what they think motivates them is what motivates them. And another 50% of the people are usually believe they're self-aware, but what they think motivates them are actually their lowest motivators and their highest motivators. They've got them the wrong way around. And they're really obviously quite sceptical about, well, hold on a minute, you know, money and promotion, of course it's important to me, but this is saying that it's less important, that this is more important. And what I often find is it's sometimes the most intellectually intelligent people that actually don't really understand what drives them and what their real motivators are. And I found it's really cut through a lot of preliminary coaching conversations to actually get straight down into them fundamentally understanding what makes them tick, to then be able to make a difference as a coach. So it's usually 50-50 in the audience, but I would imagine with an audience of coaches that most of you will know what makes you tick. But if anybody does want to have a report afterwards to see if what they thought motivated them does motivate them, then just let us know, okay? So we're going to show you how to measure and map motivation and how they've used it at Grosvenor to look at how they can create more of a thriving culture. So that's the format. So first of all, why Grosvenor? Why did they use it?
Okay. So who are Grosvenor? So does anybody know who we are? That's always an interesting question. So we're not the casino and not the chain of hotels. That's usually the one that we get. Nope, no. Okay. absolutely, we are. Grosvenor Estates, thank you very much. So Grosvenor Estates are the largest privately owned property organisation internationally. So we manage all of the property assets that belong to the Grosvenor family, and ultimately that's headed up by the Duke of Westminster. You might see him in the metro every now and again. He's kind of a little ginger guy, about 24 years old, worth about $6 billion. You know, it's kind of great. So that's what we do. And one of our fundamental tenets is that we are the stewards of the assets that we look after. So within London, that's predominantly the original estate, which is Mayfair and Belgravia, most of. And the idea is that we generate an income for the family on that, but also we create a long-term sustainable urban space for people to live and work. And the idea is that in generations to come, when the Grosvenor family is still going, when we're gone, there will still be a Mayfair and a Belgravia that's thriving, and that's ultimately what we're there to do. Now, I'm relatively inarticulate, so I thought I'd show you a film that sort of demonstrates that a bit better than I probably could have just said. So hopefully this will give you a sense of what we're about. So the idea is now you all want to rush out and rent property in Mayfair, in which case I've done my job, hopefully. So why is motivation really important for us and people? So our finance director, who, you know, you might imagine is kind of, you know, on the more cynical side of, you know, kind of people and feelings and emotions, said, as an organisation, we have some of the best assets in the world. We're incredibly well-funded, and we have less debt than most organisations. Brilliant. So why is motivation important? He said, because the only thing that's going to F it up is people. So therefore, we're investing an awful lot of time and energy on our people, because that's where we see either the best value coming from, but also the greatest risk. And particularly around leadership. So why did we think that motivation was key? Well, we've come to believe that we've got an organisation full of very well-educated, very well-paid individuals who do some really fantastic work. But their motivations on why they do that, what drives them to do that, what gets them up in the morning and engage them with this kind of vision to achieve great results and great change is the key to great success. So we have devised a leadership program which is fundamentally about great coaching and understanding what's driving people and using that to get great results. And that's why, and I'll tell you more about it soon, we thought motivational maps would be a really good tool to help us to start to unpick some of that.
So do you want to talk a little bit about your...
Our leadership programme? Yeah, absolutely. So we spent a year, which in our kind of timelines is nothing. So long-range planning for us is 300 years. Short-range planning is about 10 or 15 years, so just to give you a sense. So we spent a year looking at what does great leadership mean at Grosvenor. So myself, a number of the directors and a few other people all got together, spent some time in Switzerland with IMD Business School and came up with something which was really good and our executive team hated. So admit some failure. And the reason they hated it was because it wasn't relevant to specifically for Grosvenor. It was, you know, great, it was generic, but it could apply to any organisation at all. So the challenge was to really reframe it and talk about what this means for Grosvenor. And we came up with these eight, we call them characteristics. I won't go into all of them, but the one that was really at the heart of everything we did was this releasing surprising potential at the top. And this is actually part of the programme we mandate for anybody who's in a leadership position within the UK Grosvenor business. So if you're a leader, you have to do a programme about releasing surprising potential. And the vast majority of that is about coaching and understanding motivation. And the word surprising is always an interesting one. And the reason we say surprising is because we don't think you can prejudge what potential somebody has. But if you have great coaching conversations, you can find out. And that's been a really interesting thing to explore. And as I say, this is the piece that we've mandated. So all the other ones, you know, you can choose to learn about great placemaking. You can choose to learn about stakeholder management. But releasing people's potential, that you have to do as a leader.
I think that was when we started having conversations about, given that that's important, sorry. But given that that's important, Rob and I had ongoing conversations about, you know, so how do you release surprising potential? You know, you can teach managers coaching skills, you can give them leadership tools. But part of what we felt was the missing link was motivation. And use this quote from Stephen Covey, motivation is a fire from within. If someone else lights that fire under you, chances are it'll burn very briefly. And I think a lot of organisations that we're talking to about creating culture change, they want to empower their people to do it for themselves. It's not like, what's the organisation got to do? It's how can we really fire up people themselves to understand themselves and be more effective, be more motivated. And so we had a whole debate about engagement surveys, and Grosvenor do a very good engagement survey. But the difference in an engagement survey and actually mapping people's motivation and helping them to use that to drive performance. And the thing about engagement surveys is they're very useful at employees telling the organisation what they need the organisation to do for them. But what motivation does is actually help the individual understand what it is that motivates them personally and what they can do about it. And yes, their leader or their line manager can help them, but ultimately it's empowering the individual. And so it's about creating that inspiring potential from the core of each individual colleague. Motivation is energy. It comes from the Anglo-Norman term motive, which means drive. And so, you know, obviously as coaches we're familiar with really working with people on their inner drivers. And, you know, it's their inner drivers that we know determine, you know, how they feel and how they act. But I think sometimes people don't really understand what their inner drivers are. And I know I've spent many, many hours coaching people on their behaviours and supporting them with behaviour change. And what I find is that once we understand the motivations underneath the behaviours, you can actually help them step change and create bigger shifts in their mindset and who they are. So business benefits of motivation and engagement, you know, we're probably all familiar with them, but quite often, and when we were selling this in as part of Grosvenor's cultural change, we talked a lot about the impact that this could have from a return on investment point of view. So highly engaged, highly motivated employees are 50% more likely to outperform their performance targets. So this can have some real performance benefits on the business's bottom line if you really understand what motivates people. And also, the best companies at engaging and motivating people achieve 4.5 times the revenue growth. So there are some real genuine business drivers, that would help not only help them have the best people possible, but also drive the performance of the overall organisation. So that was part of our sort of sell when we were sort of contextualising this for the business when we were embarking on the cultural change. Do you want to just talk a little bit about where the culture was and what you were looking for?
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess from a cultural shift point of view, being 300 years old means you come with a little bit of baggage. And sort of over a period of years, we'd created a very warm and fostering culture. I think if you look at all of our employee engagement surveys, even now, we've just done one. We got nearly 90% engagement, which is pretty good going. On the flip side, what we weren't very good at doing, and still got some work to do, was around the challenge and stretch side and the feedback side of really moving people forward. So where we really struggled was we were really good at nurturing, caring and looking after people, but we weren't great at getting them to kind of release potential to do bigger and better things, to be really ambitious. And if you look at the film, that hopefully demonstrates some of the things we want to do with a large chunk of London, and it's going to require some really ambitious thinking, some really kind of challenging hard work. So therefore we need to be able to stretch people. And the only way we feel we can do that is by understanding their motivations and plugging into those to get them to want to be more aspirational, to try even harder, because we're doing stuff that motivates and drives them, as opposed to kind of banging them with a big stick and that kind of stuff, which typically as an organisation we wouldn't do, and in the past hasn't worked. So that cultural shift from kind of lovely, warm, embracing, but more now kind of commercial, a bit more hard-nosed and a bit more driving, was definitely the journey that we were on.
And we were sort of talking to the business about why is motivation important, why are we learning this, why are we teaching it in leadership development and coaching, and as all good leaders know, they've got to be good at giving direction and being really clear with people on what they need. People need the skills and the capabilities, but they also need the motivation. And we'll often say, what's most important, are they equal, is it as important for a leader to give direction as it is to really build capability, or is motivation important? And we would argue that motivation is a good 60 to 70% of that mix, in that if you could have the most talented, most capable people in the world with a really clear vision and strategy and direction, but if nobody's motivated, the business isn't going to go anywhere. And so this is how we started to sort of plant the seed with people that, yes, you've got to be a good leader and give direction and build capability and coach them, but actually motivation is a core to that. And also from a cultural point of view, the motivational roots of the organisation and how the organisation behaves will influence the mindset, the behaviours and sort of artefacts of the organisation. So we were really keen, working with Rob, to get into the emotional ground of the business and to help people understand that. And I think it's quite interesting that we had some understandably quite sceptical people around, well, why are we doing this? I'm much more comfortable dealing with architects and working on various things. Why do we really need to be understanding what that emotional ground is? And I think Rob can give some quite good examples of people that we've managed to shift that mindset by really understanding what motivates them. So this is part of how we explained it to people. And then Rob will talk you a little bit about how we actually went about doing it in Grosvenor.
Yeah. So that's a really, really important point. So I would put myself up there mainly with the cynics, unfortunately. So I started my career as a salesperson, so kind of inherently cynical. And the thing that I was particularly attracted to with the motivational maps was you can start to put numbers on motivation. You can start to put frameworks around it. And it's all a bit subjective, but the fact that I can sit in a boardroom and I can say that team is 45% motivated is fantastic, because it's the first time I've ever really been able to put hard numbers on the people and emotive side of what people are doing. So that was particularly attractive. So how did we embed it? Well, the first thing that I did was got a group of, if you imagine it like the stakeholder map, those advocates, so the influential advocates who I knew would be quite supportive of what we're trying to do, and accredited them to be able to debrief the motivational map. So rather than using just members of our kind of HR team, the kind of internal coaches, they were accredited too, but members of the business were accredited to actually facilitate these. and then got them to start rolling out these motivational maps with their teams. So they took ownership for it, they ran it all. And then the second thing we did was we built it in as part of our leadership program. So people had to go out, do debrief a motivational map, do a bit of coaching with their teams, and then come back during our workshops and talk about what they'd achieved, what results they'd had. So very quickly, those people who'd really bought into the motivational maps were able to talk about the value in terms of coaching their teams, because, as Carol said, getting straight into the kind of nub of what was driving people and who they were and why they were, they had this kind of accelerator back pad that they'd never had before. And it made fairly mediocre coaches, in terms of those managers, really good really quickly. So for their own personal development, they were absolutely loving it. And they kind of raved about it to lots of people, even outside the organisation, about the way it's really, really helped them. So that was sort of last year. We did quite a lot of rollout. And then this year, we've started to map the motivation of teams. So we've even been able to say, OK, individually, you've got a collection of people who are all motivated by lots of different things, but what does your team look like? What are the particular motivational drivers? And already, it's becoming quite clear that in Grosvenor, we have a particular motivation profile. So we have a bunch of people who are motivated by some pretty specific things. Unfortunately for our reward team, they're not money, so we need to look at that.
Maybe that's a good thing, though.
Because actually the way we're rewarding people isn't very well aligned to what's coming out of the reports about what's really driving people to be part of Grosvenor. But it's nice to see that actually an awful lot of people are motivated by the same thing. So in terms of connecting with our vision, it's really important.
So what we're going to sort of share now really is how we went about coaching people and supporting them on their individual motivators, and share some of that background on the individual motivators, because that's the starting point in Grosvenor. We ran individual profiles for people so that every leader understood what motivated them, and what their, most importantly, what their top motivators were, but equally what their demotivators were, or their turn-offs that might actually de-energise them. So every leader understood their own personal profile before we then start mapping their teams, so they could then understand what was important to their teams, what was similar and what was different. And also that, you know, gives them a bit of a, having their team profile was a bit of a handbook that they get, like a Bible of, okay, so how I need to motivate Susan is this and this, and what I need to do for John is this and this. So they found it very helpful in terms of, from a leadership point of view, the things, what their hot buttons are. So we're going to share a bit of the individual and the teams, and the overall idea on this is to actually map the whole organisation, so you can then, as Rob says, start to look at it in terms of how does that map against our values and our vision, and how can we use that information to really help drive the culture. So the roots of motivation. I think most people sitting in this room will know a lot of this, so I'm going to go just very lightly. But motivational map tool was actually created by a gentleman called James Sale. He's written a book called Motivational Maps, and he's currently writing one on motivation and teams. You can get it on Amazon if you're interested, but I've tried to pick out the top line bits so that you can sort of understand the overview of it without needing to buy the book. But where he drew his research from, he researched motivation for over 10 years and looked at lots of different theories. And as you can imagine, he was really trying to get into, so what is it that fundamentally makes people tick? And he's come up with three key roots of motivation. So part of what motivates us is our personality. And if we're doing things that suit our personality preferences, the chances are we're going to be more motivated. And a part of our work as coaches is helping people to understand their personalities and what their preferences are, and hopefully align what they're doing around that. So personality is a really important factor. But James always says people don't get out of bed in the morning because of their personality. They get out of bed in the morning because of what motivates them. And it's not just about personality. So over and above personality, what also is a root to people's motivation is what Jung called your self-concept, what you believe about yourself. You know, how comfortable you are, you know, it goes back to authentic leadership, but you know, we know whether you are really confident in who you are. And it goes without saying that if you're doing something that really suits your personality preferences and you feel really good about what you're doing and really confident and you've got a strong self-concept, you're going to be more motivated. And the third thing, that the root for motivation, is future expectations. So how excited or optimistic are people about their future? So when we were working with people in Grosvenor, we were helping them. We were mapping their personality. In Grosvenor, they'd used MBTI. And so motivational maps is a very nice next step once people have understood their personality and what makes them tick from that perspective and how they deal with colleagues, to then understand underneath the personality, what's actually driving that and what's really important to them. So they got the personality piece. And other organisations we've worked with do insights, personality profiling. Again, that maps very nicely. It's a nice step to then move on to be able to help them understand their motivation. So what this does over and above a personality profile is it helps people understand their self-concept and their future expectations. Now, the thing about our self-concept and our future expectations is they're quite dynamic and they can change quite a lot. Our personalities evolve, but they tend to evolve slowly over time, whereas how we, you know, what we believe about ourselves could be really strong for most people a lot of the time, but if something happens that knocks them off balance or they're less resilient, then their motivation will go down because their self-concept has shrunk. And as coaches, I know we work a lot with really helping people expand their self-concept. So because motivation is partly due to people's self-concept and their future expectations, people's maps can change and how motivated they are can change. Now, the downside to that is it's a bit frustrating because it's capturing you at a moment in time and that moment in time will then move. But the benefit for a lot of organisations we're working with is obviously they're going through lots of change. And for people to understand what's actually motivating and what's driving them and how they can best navigate the change and then take a profile now and then let's do a profile in 6 months and let's see how we've moved through this, it's a really useful, we're finding a very useful tool to support people going through change and helping them with their adaptability strategies. When James created the tool, he's drawn most predominantly on Maslow, the Enneagram, and career anchors. Most people are quite familiar with Maslow and a hierarchy of needs. And I think there is something I always sort of make a caveat in these things, is that, you know, once people start looking at what motivates them, there's that of, oh, what motivates you? Or is my motivator better than yours? Am I closer to self-actualization? You know, because the motivators can map and some of the language maps on. And I think in Maslow's time, it was a hierarchy because, yes, you know, if our physiological needs aren't being met and we haven't got food and we haven't got water, we're not going to be bothered about, you know, other more self-esteem type motivators or self-actualization motivators. But once the sort of physiological needs are met, I make great pains to explain to people when they're learning about motivation that if you've got a need for safety in the Western world, it's no less valid or no, you know, you're not a less evolved person than if you've got a real sort of motivation against purpose and making a difference. The purpose of making a difference maps directly onto self-actualization. But I always say to people, don't judge that, in that people can have a blend of motivators. And I don't think the hierarchy exists quite as much as Maslow felt it did. It definitely does at the bottom. But I think I'm always quick to say to people, don't judge. This is just useful to give people a perception of where they are.
And people do ask that. They do ask, which one's the right one? It doesn't work that way.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's a classic coaching thing. It's like everything is valid and it just gives you a useful insight into the dynamics of yourself and where you are now and what's driving you now. And often people, when they get their profile, it's like, wow, so that's why I made that decision. That's why I left that job. I mean, you actually said that, didn't you?
Yes. Shall I tell my unfortunate story? Okay. So some years ago, I was working for a not particularly fun place to work. I won't name the organisation, but their recruitment business. I was heading up learning and development for them. And during one particularly sticky meeting where the European chief exec, who was my boss, was sort of yelling at me as if I was some sort of naughty schoolchild, I walked out of the meeting and out of the job. I then phoned up my best friend, who'd been the best man at my wedding, and say, how do I explain to my wife I've just walked out of my job? And I knew it was the right thing to do, and it worked out brilliantly. But it wasn't until Carol did my motivational map, and one of the motivators particularly kind of spiked as a really big one, that I worked out what had happened. And effectively, this person had well and truly stomped on my need to be kind of free, in charge, autonomous, all that kind of stuff. And I just reacted, and that was it. I just walked straight out. But and I knew it was the right thing to do. But what I didn't know until we did a map was to the extent to which that was a big thing for me and what it really meant. So it was a really useful insight.
So I think that's a bit of, we've given you a lot of the theory, and I'm mindful that you've all been sitting there, but nobody's been speaking. So what I'd like you to think about, we've talked about motivation quite a bit. If you were now to score yourself in terms of how motivated you feel you are right now in your work, in your life, and you had to score yourself out of 100%, could you just write down, I'm not going to expose anybody, but could you just write down how motivated you feel you are right now? It's not a trick question. And then my second question is, if you can think about a team, or it might be a family unit you're involved in, but a group of significant people for you that you're a part of, if you had to overall rate how motivated they are as a group, what score would you put for them, yourself being a part of that? Because we'll often ask leaders these questions before we show them their profile, because their profile will actually give them a percentage of how motivated they are. But also we help them think about what impact are they having, and is their team, maybe I'll ask for those of you that have written down, how many of you put your own personal motivation score higher than the group you were evaluating? Okay. And how many put it lower? And I think that's just thinking about what's your role in that group. And if you've got high motivation, you know, motivation's energy, how much does your energy influence that group? And we'll often say to leaders, so how much does your level of motivation create an environment for people to excel? But equally, how much, if your team's really motivated or your group's really motivated and you're slightly less, can you tap into that team a little bit more to help get your energy up? But it definitely helps when you know what it is that actually motivates you. So there are three clusters of motivation in this tool. And some people get out of bed in the morning because of the relationships. I'm going to get you to think which one you think is important for you. So, you know, for some people it's about relationships. It's about the people they meet, the teams they're involved in, the connections they have, you know, the sort of social esteem that they're held in, the friends that they have. And that's what really motivates them and lights their fire. For other people, it's about achievement. It's about feeling like they are making progress in something, feeling like they're moving forward, that they're performing in some way. You know, the achievement might be through directing other people. It might be through really building a certain area of expertise and being the go-to person around something. It may well be building financial wealth for yourself, financial well-being. So that's what sometimes motivates people. And the third one is growth. And what we mean by the growth motivators are people who are really motivated by either growing themselves, growing other people, growing a business, growing some ideas. But the growth motivated people tend to be quite future orientated. What gets them out of bed in the morning is excited about possibility, whether it's for themselves or for other people. The achievement motivated people tend to be focused on the here and now and what's in front of me and what do I need to achieve. And the relationship people can be quite past orientated, or it's about past, protecting the past, protecting what they've built up. So I'll often ask leaders to rank those. You know, which one do you think is your predominant motivational cluster? Which is your second and which is your third? And if I'm feeling really mean, I'll ask them to put percentages against each one. Let me just have a show of hands. How many people think that potentially relationships might be their most important motivator? Quite a few of you. Yeah. How many people feel achievement is? Yeah, growth. Okay. It doesn't surprise me with sort of audience that growth may well be someone's predominant motivator. Sometimes here I'll also say to people, remember what we're talking about is motivation and your inner drivers. It's not your capability or your strengths. So you might be really growth orientated and you want to grow other people, you know, really help grow things. And your relationships might be your lowest motivation, but it's not that you're not very good at relationships. It's just that what really gets you out of bed in the morning is the possibility for growth. So that's the first thing I want you to think about. Now I'm going to get you to think about the individual motivators. And for those of you sitting near the front, you've got some sets of cards. If you don't have any cards and you do want to participate, if you put your hand up, I'll pass you some. What I'm going to do is put up the 9 work motivators, and they're all on these cards. And anyone not got any that would like some? And I'd just like you to put the cards in order from where you what you think most motivates you down to what you think least motivates you. I'll often do this with a coaching client and get them to really think. Anybody else? Yeah. Yeah, do you want to pass them around and get some more? So put them in order of, yes, all 9. Yes, so what you think for you personally is most important. So if you think the relationship motivators are important to you, you know, you might have a strong defender who likes stability, you know, likes predictability, and likes to feel safe. You might have a friend motivator that really likes connection, building fulfilling relationships with people, really seeking belonging. Or you might be the star that likes recognition, you like, you know, some self-esteem. You know, you like to be noticed in some way. If you've got the achievement motivators, it might be the director that likes to have control and influence over people. Equally, it might be the builder. The builder is the one that's most commercially orientated. You know, quite often when we're working with managers, they think if they want to keep some of their key team members, they need to pay them more or offer them a promotion. And yes, if they have a builder motivator, then they probably do. But the builder is the only one that, you know, it's often somebody who's really strongly motivated by builder likes, you know, above average standard of living. You know, they like to be able to feel that they're being well paid for what they do. And they like promotions. The expert likes knowledge, you know, loves to be the go-to person around a particular area of expertise and really wants to develop that, and that's what drives them. The growth motivators, we've got the creator who loves innovating. Coming up with new things, new solutions, continuous improvement. We've got the spirit. Rob's sitting up there with very high spirit, likes freedom and autonomy, and you know, likes to be able to make their own decisions, likes ownership over things. And then we've got the searcher, who really seeks meaning and wants to make a difference and likes to do things on purpose. If you've more or less got them in order, if you'd just like to choose somebody to have a quick coaching conversation around what your high motivators, what your low motivators are, sort of what you're starting to get from this. I'm only going to give you a very short, probably 2 minutes each way, to just have a really quick chat. Okay, so I hope you're starting to get a little bit of insight and we've started to stimulate your thinking a little bit. Where this has started to sort of come real with people is when we actually show them their report. So, and from a coaching perspective, what you find is you'll get an overall motivational score for someone. So this particular example, the person was 62% motivated. So that puts them in what we call the boost zone. So if you're 62% motivated, that's fairly motivated, it's not bad. Over running over 20,000 maps, the average motivation score is coming in at just under 60%. So this is slightly more than the average. So it's you know, it's a good level of motivation. We call it the boost zone because if the person just had a few small boosts, that could make quite a big difference to them. So the value of understanding their motivators and which ones to focus on could help really shift their performance and their motivation. I spend my life coaching people to get them in the get into the optimal zone, so have motivation of 80% or more, whether that's an individual or a team. The challenge once someone's in the optimal zone is how they sustain it. So a lot of conversation around sustainability and resilience. With a lot of organisations going through change at the minute, we do have quite a lot of people, less so at Grosvenor, but in some of the other organisations we've been working with, that have lower levels of motivation. And I sometimes, you know, you have people saying, oh gosh, are you going to share this to my manager? You know, because, you know, I've come out and I'm only like 40% motivated. This is terrible. We don't share the motivation scores unless people choose to. But I'll often say to people when I'm coaching them, well, so do you feel motivated then? And, you know, this particular person went, well, no, that's probably about right. You know, I'm annoyed with this, I'm frustrated with this, I don't like this. It's like, have you had any conversations with anyone? Well, no, not yet. So it's like, well, when are you going to start your conversations? You know, what do you need to do? And then they sort of go, okay, this report would be really useful because I can go in and say, look, I'm only 40% motivated. This is what motivates me. This isn't where I'm being met. And this is what I want to do about it. Because the tool's quite proactive because it gives people strategies on what they can do. So it can help them be more empowered around what they're doing rather than saying to the manager, I'm demotivated, what are you going to do about it? It's, I'm this level of motivation, this is what I need, maybe this is what I need from you and this is what I'm going to do myself. What you get if you do the report, and if anybody does want to do it, I just need your name and your email address, is you get the motivators in order and how important they are. So you see those top two. This person has very strong builder. So what motivates them is, you know, they want above average standard of living. You know, they want commercially things to be good for them. But at the same time, they want to make a difference. They want to add value. And both of those are what we would call a spike because they're hitting that line of 30. So those are, in a way, really non-negotiable motivators. So unless they're doing something where they really feel they're making a difference but they're also making the money that they think they deserve, they could be demotivated. But if they're doing things that work to that, their motivation is going to be really high. But interestingly, what demotivates them is the director. The director is about having power and control over people and influence over people. So if this person was a line manager or someone that had a lot of direct reports, then, you know, there could be the potential for them to be quite demotivated if they had to do a lot of directing. But part of the coaching is to help them look at how they can use their top motivators to help influence them to do things that they don't like doing. And also what you can look at is how satisfied people are in their motivators. So once you understand what their top motivators are, this particular person, the builder was their top motivator, and actually they were only giving it a 7 out of 10 satisfaction score. They were quite satisfied with meaning and making a difference, and they were quite satisfied with using their expertise, but where their dip in motivation was, their most important motivator wasn't being met. So it's like, okay, so what do we need to do to boost that? So, you know, it's a classic coaching opportunity where you look at this is where they are, this is what their motivation is, these are what their drivers are, let's look at where the gaps are and how do we close the gaps. And what the reports do in much more detail is give people strategies for their top motivators and their bottom motivators and what they can do and how they can motivate themselves. And I think it's quite good. Rob sort of brings alive some of the strategies in Grosvenor of how they actually got people to engage in this so that they could not only motivate themselves but also motivate their people. So do you want to...
Yeah, so I'd kind of tell you a kind of very like short kind of 2 second... 2 minute story about a chap who will remain nameless because one or two of you have worked with people in Grosvenor, so you'll know who it is. Let's call him Bob Smith. I hope you call Bob Smith because you'd be the example everybody uses. So Bob was a fairly typical line manager, so highly technical, been in the business a long time, lots of technical expertise in the field, not a great line manager if I'm honest, particularly around things like emotional intelligence and the kind of the more human side of leadership. So I had him accredited in motivational mapping. I also got him to do a coaching masterclass with Annie. So we essentially just went, right, he's probably the most cynical person in the building. Let's overdo the amount of development we give him in this space. And what happened was, as you might imagine, he started to implement some of these things. And the first challenge he had was he thought everybody was like him and motivated by the builder piece. So all about kind of commerciality, financial reward. So that's the way he would motivate his team. And he was really struggling to get them to really buy into his kind of aspiration for where the team was going. So he did the maps for his own team and he debriefed them and he managed them. All comfortable, they were comfortable with him doing that. And he realised that everybody on his team was not motivated by the financials. And in fact, the vast majority of his team were motivated by the searcher, that kind of need to have meaning. And in fact, most people at Grosvenor are motivated by the searcher. So he realised that his leadership style had to completely change. So he changed from being highly directive, being driven about financials and results, to talking to people about how he would develop their careers, about the different experience they'd have as a result of staying with him, and inspiring them to kind of get into that vision stuff about where we're going as an organisation. And within literally 6 months, his team performance went through the roof, absolutely went through the roof, and all of them reporting high levels of engagement and high levels of performance. Now, ostensibly, he's not a brilliant coach now. He's not, you know, that much better of a line manager, but the things he's pulling, those levers he's pulling as a line manager, are the right ones as opposed to the wrong ones, and it's made a huge difference. And we've now got a big advocate in somebody who was previously quite cynical just because they bought into it as part of that. So he's a quite a nice case study of, you know, this is, you know, commercially this is a really valuable tool that we've found has worked really, really effectively for us.
Okay.
Thank you
both very much. It was fantastic to hear, you know, both from the practitioner's point of view but also just the client.
Just the client.
And it does help, I think, hugely to hear things brought to life and to really hear about the difference it makes. So thank you both very much. And just a small token of appreciation from Coaching at Work, giving you time up today. So thank you
very much. Thank you.